This is simply out of this world with JPR. Mixing global styles with JPR.
Sunday, I'll make you show me. Living the samba, I feel. Lambasa re, santa me, kamba. Lambasa so, mana mate kaya. Yenne santo, semerike yasha. Lambasu tu ke palapa se paya. Yumbe santo, pe canto. Lambasu. Amaya to melaya, dimi sembra me sarama tu kufe, disi mie la manatora ya, la mata tu kuri disi paya, ene sano de me deke chando, de masada tu kufi pie saya. Ela sabe, ela sabe de pizza lá e lá.
Yeah.
Good evening, this is Out of This World with JPR, and that was Randolph Matthews and Byron Johnston with Tarantas from their new album, In the Shadow of Leaves. I'm just about to talk to them.
Hello, Randolph and Byron.
Hello.
Hi there.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I've got with me today in the studio Randolph Matthews and Byron Johnston. They've got a new album called In the Shadow of Leaves, and they'll also be playing at the Forge in Camden on the 30th of June, so we hope to see you there. So I've just got a few questions for you. Basically, some of the questions are for both of you, and some other questions are directed to one person in particular. So, how did you two meet, and what were you doing before you met?
Well, before we met, we were both playing for many years as soloists, and we did many solo shows. And how we met is through a wonderful musician friend that we both have, a guy called Paul Wheeler. Now, I hope I'm not embarrassing him if when he hears this, but Paul's day job is he's the director of the TV series Have I Got News For You. So he's a very, very skilled person, but he's a musician as well. And Paul said to me, Brian, there's a guy called Randolph Matthews, and you need to see this guy play. He's doing these really, really great things, really exciting things with the voice. And Paul had seen me play with guitar. So I said, okay, I'll take this. Then I need to do this. So we managed to get Randolph to come and play in my hometown in Guildford, put on a show there, and he came down and I saw Randolph do his whole set by himself, and that was it. And I was like, Ran, we're having a songwriting session together, and that's kind of how it went from there.
And what were you doing before then? Were you just...
I was doing years as a soloist, since 2006. I've been playing as a soloist. I did my record back then called Oceano back in 2007. So I've been doing shows for that. I've been traveling and playing and doing lots of fun things as a soloist. And the time came where I was ready to collaborate and meet people again and ready to go, being a soloist is kind of a big confidence thing there. You need to be able to do it, and it's really a mental game that you're playing when you do it. So the time came where I started to get a bit lonely up there. I'd done a few years as it, and I thought, okay, now is time to have some company up on stage. And a bit before that, I'd met a great violinist called Anna Phoebe, who I'm doing a collaboration with, and then it was wonderful because I met Randolph, and there I was back again working with a singer, and it'd been such a long time since I'd worked with a singer.
Great. And what about you, Randolph, then? What were you doing before you met?
What was I doing before I met Byron? I was cleaning up my house. No. I've been collaborating with different artists, and at this particular point, I'd literally just started to put a campaign together to create collaborations with artists, because I always know that it's like diamonds. Diamonds polish themselves so much quicker and come to full life once you work with other people. But equally, as well, that inspires me in terms of my own solo work, which was what I was doing. I did an album about the same year as Byron, 2007. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I was doing solo work, but really wanted to work with the best people. That brought out what I do as an artist. And at the same time, that would contribute to something wonderful, which is music, the love of music. So that's what led me towards going up to different territories. I mean, Guildford was far, but but for me, it was a great opportunity to see how other people do things. And I'd heard a lot about Byron through my friend Paul, about his work, and I got the great opportunity to meet him. And here it is now.
Your album, In the Shadow of Leaves, which I've been listening to quite a lot actually, is very accomplished, I find. You call it a radical world music collaboration. Why do you think it is radical? And also, I've noticed that it's a self-produced album. So why self-produced?
Oh, okay, all right. There's a couple of good questions there. What I found playing with Randolph is that whenever we wanted to do something, whenever we needed something, it just seemed to arrive, it just seemed to land on our laps. We seem to go out, play shows, put this energy out there, put these songs out there. Whenever we needed something, it would just seem to come to us. And the funny thing is that not long before I met Randolph, I'd opened for a good friend of mine called Mark Buck, who's a great jazz blues player, loves his blues, and he has a recording studio down in Sussex. And Mark said to me, Brian, if you fancy doing any recording, just come to the studio and let me know. And it was then literally 2-3 weeks after that, I met Randolph. And we started working together. And so I just ended up giving Mark a call, saying, Mark, you know, we had this chat. He's like, yeah. I said, well, look, there's this guy you don't know. You've never seen him before. But I've got a really good feeling about this. We've got a bunch of songs together. We've only played one gig, but just trust me. Just trust me on this. And that's it. And then we went down to Mark's studio down in Sussex and started recording and just started on this wonderful thing last summer. And it just went from a little EP that we were going to do 4 or 5 tracks, it just turned naturally into a whole album, and that's how it happened.
Yeah, it's beautifully recorded, actually.
Thank you. Just took so much time over it, you know. Mark was so wonderful, and he's like, when people talk about what's a good engineer to work with, when someone's going to listen to you and capture the sound, and what does that mean? Most people don't see this, because this is something that always happens behind the scenes, but what you want is someone that's kind of like a friend, that's a great musician, that's very relaxed and has got a great sense of humour, because that energy, you want to impart that onto a recording. You don't really want tension or personality clashes. That's not a good thing. And Mark was kind of all these great, very just relaxed, really nice guy, and it was a wonderful experience to do it, you know.
Yeah. So, I mean, why do you call it radical, Randolph? Why is it a radical? In what sense do you call them? Because radical is roots, right? So
radical roots. Oh.
It's the same word, but idea. Yeah.
Well, I think there is a big part of that which is very true. I think for me, as an artist, I feel like through this project, I'm able to get to the roots of what my culture is about, in terms of my Caribbean roots, and even further to sort of West African influence in terms of the Caribbean islands that I've come from. And I think because of where Byron comes from his angle of flamenco, but not even just flamenco, but just his worldliness, he gives me an opportunity to really tap and tap and tap and tap and tap. And I think it happens both ways. Yeah. We both seem to bring out more. Like yesterday, we had a bit of a jam together and think about some new ideas for our performances. And I spoke to him about the sort of desert blues type angle of our work, because I was brought up in the last period. I was listening to people like Ali Fakatour and the Malian music, and I just was like, this music is so close, but then it's literally one note difference between where we're at, and we hit that note, that pentatonic,
yeah.
And it was like, that's when we got those kind of radical moments again.
Indigenous man is typically desert blues.
Yeah. So that's what we get. Another aspect of the radicalness is what can be created based on two people coming together. Mm. And we thought about this, is actually the quality is this big sound based on the use of technology, based on something which is actually really bringing worlds together, but it's really about what can be created in a space based on just two people's collaborative force. And I think that there is something very radical about that in terms of the time, in terms of what you create and what you hear and what you see.
So, I mean, at the moment it's self-produced. I keep saying to my listeners that you have to go come and see you to get the CD. Is it going to be released through distribution?
Absolutely. All in good time. I mean, it might sound crazy, because I know so many people look at the business and look at the music industry and they sort of say, you know, all this, well, let's get loads of stuff on YouTube, let's get loads of stuff on MySpace, let's get loads of stuff on iTunes. And all I'm seeing is there's so much stuff, and it's just, I just feel like I want to get people off the couch and come and see music and come and see performance, because a lot of times you tune into television and you see entertainment on TV, and it's not all about that kind of entertainment. There's a whole other thing out there. So we deliberately didn't put a lot of stuff on YouTube. We didn't put the record available electronically immediately, so people, they could only get to us by coming and seeing and sharing in the energy of the shows that we play. And later on down the line, of course, yeah, we're going to distribute and we're going to put this out there.
Well, I've been playing it for the last 4 weeks. I've been playing one track at a time. This interview will give me the opportunity of maybe playing more than 2 tracks from it.
Oh, so cute. Oh,
Album Simple Pleasures, a great influence on Randolph Matthews' singing. Let's get back to the interview.
That's a question to both of you. You've kind of answered it in one way, but in another way, maybe you want to be more precise. How do you write the music that you play at the moment?
How do we write the music?
Yeah, how do you? How does it come about?
It's a generation of ideas which happen extremely quickly. Sometimes I walk out. I mean, again, I have to make reference again to last night, because me and Byron, you know, between the project itself, we don't get to see each other that much until we get to the gig and we go, and then it starts to kind of happen. But there's something about reminding ourselves of something which is so precious about what we have, and that is a simple idea, a simple theme, a simple word. A simple poetic gesture can indicate so much about how the music then gets written. Last night we had about an hour together, and we had pretty much three very strong songs already done. One, me bringing an old existing song, Byron bringing a song that we want to do a version of in our own way. So at the moment there isn't really a set way that we write. It's just, it comes from inspiration. It just comes from, check this out. And that's where it starts. And then we both, from our experience of working with lots of different musicians, I think we bring in the ability to bring collaboration very quickly, because we're open to collaborate. It can be very difficult for some people. Songwriting can be very difficult. It's a very difficult relationship, because you really are opening yourself to someone's ideas, and you're embracing it, and you're saying, okay, yeah, that's good. Or you're saying, that's not really that good. Yeah. But how do you find the best way to do it? So I always just have an open sense of how we get together to do that. So there's no real set way, and we haven't really discovered what that is, even with recordings yet, because we're recording an album so quickly. I don't think we actually remember what we did.
Your EP, I must admit, is very good too. So I advise our
thank you.
To go and dig it out. It's available for downloading.
That's right. Next album coming out very soon. Yeah.
And that's a question for Randolph, really. What African language do you use in some of the songs, and where did you learn to use your voice in such an unusual way?
My first experience of using my voice, I'll go from the last question, first experience of using my voice in a vocal, expressive way, was 7 years old with two tape decks, you know, and my head in the middle of the two tape decks, putting a tape in one, recording one line, taking the tape out, putting it into the next tape recorder, and then trying to record the other line on top while the other one was recording it, until eventually I had, all I had was as a sound, and my mum calling me in the back saying, "Randolph, come downstairs, I'm having food." And then, but that was my first exploration of actually layering voices, because I always thought you can do so much with voice. Even at 7 years old, I kind of must have had this feeling about it. And then doing music, I think I had I've been on a journey, one with my own personal voice, a real struggle to kind of just get a sense of what my voice is. But I'd use all these different projects to kind of find it. So it was, I went from hip-hop, soul, jazz, folk, cover songs. I went through a whole load of different stuff until eventually that first album, which I'd done, was me kind of saying, stop! This is what I've got to say. This is my voice. And the only way I could express it was to let go of the words. Because before there are words, there are feelings. People have feelings before they actually hear something. Yeah. When we experience music, we feel music. We don't say, oh, that's the best, God, that's a lovely G minor chord he just did that. You kind of feel it. Mm-hmm. You know what it's about. So then I think because of the openness, it started my trail backwards. So from soul music, I started to go into the soul of actually world music. And from world music, I started to pinpoint more closely my Caribbean roots. And from my Caribbean roots, I started to pinpoint my roots, the kind of slavery roots, mm-hmm. the trail of my ancestry, which is West Africa. So people look at me and say, you look like you're from Ghana.
Yeah.
And they start to speak to me, it's like, no, I'm not from there. Even my mum gets the same. And with that, I just decided, you know what? It doesn't matter. What is important is that I express it, because people will find something in there. So my trail is, it could be Malian, it could be vocal percussion in terms of beatbox. All those influences are all part of me expressing the same thing, which is voice. And Byron does exactly that. I think it does exactly that with guitar. Yeah.
Betania, la belle Juana Dina.
Oh, my God.
Listening to This Is Simply Out of This World. Richard Boner from Cameroon with Aqua Samba Yaya from his album Tiki, another great influence on Randolph Matthews. Back to the interview.
And Byron, how did you learn to play the guitar? Are you self-taught or did you go through a school? Or?
Kind of a bit of both, because around 10 years ago I did train in music. I knew that I really needed to get some kind of firm grounding. There was things I didn't grasp about music, like theory and things like this. And so at the time I went and I trained in the highest qualification I could get my hands on, which was at the Academy of Contemporary Music. And it was during that time that I met a key influence. I saw a couple, actually. There was one called Eric Roach, and there was a second one called Giorgio Cerci. Both of these people taught me and influenced how I play. The funny thing is, what the influence wasn't what they were teaching, so everything that I then did since that, I've had to teach myself. Everything that I was really interested in these styles, in the technique of flamenco or world music or finger picking or classical, is that I've had to teach myself that, but I've had the benefit of having the instruction and the firm base of knowledge underneath that and underpinning that. But everything I do now is stuff that I've had to work on myself in my own time.
the extraordinary Eric Roach with The Percolator from his album The Percolator, a big influence on Byron's playing.
Okay, so to both of you, what are or who are some of your influences and what are you actually listening to at the moment?
Some of my influences deep on in my journey, and I think it's always for me is about people who have almost struggled to say what they want to say freely as well, but as well I've had this kind of worldly sense of actually, you know, ultimately I do music because the bigger picture is it can bring peace, it can bring people to a place of kind of real beauty and real kind of sense that actually we all share something here. So Marvin Gaye was a big influence for me in my first starting point of learning songs and actually learning actually how not to sing songs as well with your throat. I actually really damaged my voice quite a lot singing Marvin Gaye songs, but the feeling that I got from him was this struggle of his understanding of love. What is love in this world? You know, what does love really mean? His own struggles with that. Spirituality. He's coming from the church background and sort of trying to understand that from a worldly sense of the words in terms of gospel and at the same time being a musician, you know, wanting to succeed, wanting to do his thing. And that was always his constant battle. And so Marvin Gaye was a big influence. The Lates now, Gil Scott-Heron was a huge influence on my life as well. His poetic gesture, his ability to put poems and songs together. At that time I was writing a lot of lyrics and stories. And then later on in life I started to get more into sort of instrumental music and hence the kind of world music. So people like Richard Bonner became a big influence, and Pat Metheny became a big influence for me, sort of music which had landscapes to it but using voice and instrumentation to make that sound. So those are kind of three out of probably, as a, you know, as a musician, we have lots, but it's just like those three people really do pop out in my heart.
Right, and you, Byron?
Good times. For me, I think music for me way back probably was Jimi Hendrix, you know, was one of the first ones, and he was just like, you know, it's just this very sort of iconic person. It was more than the guitar, it was this whole thing, you know, this whole being and all the energy around him and all this stuff and just hearing his music and well-written songs and interesting sounds coming from the guitar, and a guy that really used the guitar as his voice, as well as his voice as his voice. And he was kind of the first one. And then that was before I even took music as part of my life that I was going to be working in. You know, that was way before then. And I remember after that, a friend introduced me to this singer, Annie DeFranco, who's from America. And she's this very short, she's like 5 foot, plays an acoustic guitar. And I went to see Annie DeFranco in concert. And she just had this incredible control of the whole audience, this incredible, like, stage control. And I've never seen anything like it to this day, the way she can, you know, just... It was incredible what she could do. And she just really showed me that the acoustic guitar can be a principal instrument. You know, it's not just for strumming the background chords. You can really push with that instrument, and that's what I like about Annie DeFranco, and I liked her songs. And then later on, you know, when I was training, I discovered more the flamenco technique and some of the gypsy stuff there. And then I also was introduced to Antonio Fulcioni and some of his take on things. And I really like Antonio and what he's done with his career and how he's really worked and how he's just a very nice guy, but also very, very good at what he does. He's a real craftsman. So those are kind of my big influences. The only aside to that is that along the way, I seem to have met DJs and worked with DJs in the way they work. And they're really interesting people because they don't really have any hard and fast rules or taboos that can be broken. You just do it. And there's nothing right or wrong. You just play. And I listened for a long time to Kruder and Dorfmeister and DJ Holmes and David Holmes. I'm just liking some of the stuff they were doing, you know. And one of my records that is always a favourite that I always play is by Chicane, by Nick Bracegirdle, and it's I think it's Far From the Maddening Crowd. And it's just an incredible electronic record, you know, and I love natural sounds, mm-hmm. but that record, there's something about it. There's just everything has a place. Every sound, every moment is exactly where it's supposed to be in that recording.
And what are you listening to at the moment? Like, what did you listen to this morning when you woke up?
I listened to my little boy screaming the house down. And that is music. Don't get me wrong, that is perfect music when you know he's alive. He's alive, yeah, he's there, yeah. He's present. Now, what did I listen to? I listened to recently a pianist, actually, an instrumentalist pianist called Hauschka. I just love, because he's an experimentalist pianist, so you know he has a big grand piano. He's from Germany, and what he does is he puts ping pong balls and stuff inside along with strings. So he plays, and all you can hear is all the twanging of ping pong balls or bits of paper or foil that he's put. And again, it's that whole concept of actually just people exploring their instrument in its full entirety. It's like, well, what can I do with a piano? Okay, I've got black and white keys, the lid's open. Man, there's a whole world I can put inside here. So I've been listening to him as a bit of inspiration. And Paco de Lucia, because of Byron as well. I kind of really wanted to try and get more into Byron's world in terms of actually what does that mean in terms of what we hear, and to as well help me to see if I can find ways vocally to recreate those kind of chicka-chicka-ing, sort of movements and changes that seem to simultaneously happen in flamenco music. You have little different melodies that might be played in just one particular, and the kind of clap. I just want to really make sure I can really be closer to what Byron does in terms of his work.
And what are you listening to, Byron?
I'm listening at the minute to a friend of mine called Jono McCleary, and he's on the Ninja Tune record label. And Jono, he's such a genuinely lovely guy, and he's doing bits and pieces and recording and just releasing things at the moment. And he's just got some great sounds, you know. It's kind of acoustic but ambient, and he's got a wonderful use of his voice. It's not world music. It's very contemporary. It's kind of, I put it in the almost the chill out bracket. And he's going to be going on tour with Jamie Woon, who's doing some great things at the moment as well, very commercial. And so I've been listening to Jono's stuff, you know. It's just the way he moves and uses his voice, and he's really just great, very quite understated, but he's out there, and he's one of these lucky finds. And if people are wondering, you know, who to listen to and who to check out, he's definitely a good guy to go to Google.
Ibiza Girl would be a great one for a remix.
Yeah, we talked about this actually. There's a couple tracks that we put on the record, and we thought, you know, we love that idea, and Set the Controls is one, and Ibiza Girl is another one, and I hope it happens, and I'm sure we're going to find the right person to work the track with, and it will come out, and it will hopefully be really well received in the commercial, you know, music, the house market musical, however it's done in that, you know, in that genre.
Juan Martin from his album Music Alhambra, La Feria, which is another word for La Fiesta, becoming quite Latin towards the end there. Another big influence on Byron Johnston.
What is the best memory of a gig that you saw or you were involved in?
Best memory of a gig that I saw had to be... One that just pops out is... it was Pat Metheny, actually. Mm-hmm. The depth of musicianship and the music was just plutonically just moving my life. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd just been listening to him, and this is the thing, it's like you listen to music and I'm inspired by it being, you know, when you listen to it. But when I went to see him, and this was a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. but it still has a very, yeah, Richard Bonner was still part of the group. And
as a singer or as a bass player?
He was doing both. He was doing a few different things. They all were.
There was one album on Pat Metheny album where he only sang, which was quite strange, really. To think you've got Richard Bonner and you're not asking him to play.
Yeah. I wonder if that's the one I remembered. But he was playing a guitar. He played moments of bass. He played moments of shaker. But we saw him at the Hammersmith. Hammersmith Apollo, and that really touched me because it was just the whole landscape of what music can do. You know, it was jazz, it was worldly, it was instrumental. You know, and Pat Metheny is a great taskmaster, so he's
very lyrical.
He's very lyrical, and that's the beauty of it. It's like I can hear it singing.
Yeah.
So Richard Bonner's voice on top of it was just an added bonus to kind of hear that singability being done by somebody. But yeah, that was one.
What about you, Byron?
I think I was thinking about this, probably going back to around about 2001. I saw for the first time Eric Roach play, and Eric Roach, that was the first time I saw the use of the guitar with like guitar percussion, which for anyone that doesn't know right now what I'm talking about, you can just Google Eric Roach or guitar, percussive guitar playing, or Andy McKee's another, you know, John Gomme in this country. And it was the first time I'd seen someone approach guitar playing with that method, where you can use the whole thing as a drum, all these percussive angles, as well as maintain exactly what you're doing with the strings and your melody and all these parts of the harmony going on, the full complete use of the guitar in every possible way. And that was one of those moments where things changed after that show. Mm-hmm. You know, that was one of those, any musician listening will know, when you have these moments, you see something, you think, right, from now on, I now do things differently. Suddenly the world has changed for me. And right then, the world changed at that moment.
So what is next for Randolph and Byron? What are your plans?
Well, we have big plans. We have lots of plans. We've just been doing a lot of work behind the scenes recently. And we've got a great team of people now working with us behind the scenes that are looking at all the shows that we could be playing and all the countries that we could take our music to. So some of our big plans for the next few months are visits to Europe and to go and to visit. And we've already got contacts from friends abroad that we're going to be, you know, connecting with. And so it's to take our music internationally, and also to really, really just put our music out here in the UK a lot more now. You know, I think we want to really launch the record and really do it justice and really just play a lot, because what we are here to do is to play. This is what we love doing. We love performing. So we're doing as much of that as possible. And on the 30th of June, we'll be in London at The Forge, and that's a wonderful gig, and we would love to have, you know, support there. That's our first time kind of going into what some people refer to as the heart of the music scene in London. Is Camden, that's where it is, and that's where we're going.
Great. And, well, I'm sure that some of our listeners who are able to go there will go there. I hope so anyway. I'll be there as well. So, you're going to do a couple of songs for us?
We're definitely going to play. Okay. We haven't talked about what we're going to do, so we're just going to have a moment now.
Okay.
Edit, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah, let's just check the tuning.
So what are you going to do for us?
So we're going to do one of our favourites, actually, our favourite starting point songs when we do our performances, called Indigenous Man. Jiliala mukwe mama Runo no soto komu e sato Kilena no tomu
to go.
We'll have to finish with the gigs of the week. On the 22nd of June, Juan Luis Guerra, E440 at the Hammersmith Apollo. 22nd, 23rd of June, Alex Wilson Trio at the Pizza Express at Soho. On the 27th of June, Afro-Cubism at the Royal Albert Hall. The 28th of June, Tammy Crest at the Borderline. 30th of June, Umu Sangare and Anibel Velasquez y Los Locos del Swing at the Barbican. Although, of course, I will be at the Forge with Randolph Matthews and Byron Johnston. See you there. Also on the 29th of June, Pierre Bensouzan at Norden Farm in Maidenhead. I'm hoping that I can get an interview with Pierre Bensouzan, so you've got that to look forward to in the coming weeks. I hope you enjoyed the program. See you next week. Bye. You have been listening to Simply Out of This World. Look forward to seeing you next week.